This is Julia Butterfly Hill with listener-supported radio for Peace International, your global community forum.
Hey, I'm Rub-A-Dub, and I've been ground support in Freshwater for about a year, and I support Radio for Peace International. Yow.
I'm Robert Backman. I'm a Freshwater resident, and I've been supporting Earth First and the tree sits around here for a long time, and I support Radio for Peace International out of Costa Rica.
This is David Arthur. I've worked in the forest for a number of years. I'm retired now from USDA Forest Service Soils Lab at the Gleese Ranger District, Siskiyou National Forest in Southern Oregon. And I was actively involved in mycorrhizal research with Dr. Amaranthus, Dr. Trappi, all kinds of good folks out of OSU. And I support Radio for Peace International.
My name is Starlight, and I've been a tree defender for 3 months, and I support Radio for Peace International.
My name's Wolverine, and I've been in the trees for like 9 or 10 months, and I support Radio for Peace International.
My name is Remedy, and I sat in an ancient redwood tree for 1 year without touching the ground, and I support Radio for Peace International, the voice of the people from Costa Rica.
They have all the money, but we have the will, and I would rather be a match than a paper dollar bill. Yes, I would. Yes, I would. They have the guns, all we are is flesh and blood, but we will multiply our numbers and drown them in our flood. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. They say they will incorporate the world. Over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body.
This is Jim Page, and you are listening to Radio for Peace International from Costa Rica.
I climbed Jerry March 21st, 2002, first day of spring, and stayed there for 361 days without touching the ground until I was forcibly removed by Eric Schatz and two of his contracted workers.
For a tree sit to be successful, well, A, someone has to be in the tree in order for them to prevent to be cut, and B, it takes so much support from people. This isn't, we're not making money off this. We're here to save the trees.
We're here occupying their, what they call their land.
Taking up their money.
Yeah.
We're money.
It's a beautiful experience. It's really a full spectrum experience. You know, it's the most beautiful and amazing experience you'll have, and at the same time, it'll be the most heartbreaking and saddest thing you've ever seen. You know? So it really involves your whole being to do a tree sit.
I mean, we're trying to preserve these trees that have been around quiet and stillness for predominantly most of their lives and up until the last 15 years.
The first thing that's important for people to realize is I'm not the first tree sitter. You know, tree sitting came to America as a form of protest from England well over 15 years ago. So I actually stepped into a very long and rich history of activism in the trees. And I'm most known for it because most of the time people would stay for a few days to a week and then take turns rotating in and out.
The first climbers, the first tree sitters or earth defenders that climb the tree will name the tree. So whoever is first, whoever first gets the tippy-wippy gets to ask the tree its name, and the tree gives it its name.
Here's a picture of Joan Baez. She came to the tree sits back in August and sang to me, and Wren, who was sitting in the tree right next to me. Daryl Cherney, yes, who just won his lawsuit against the FBI and Oakland Police. This is the tree sits in the fog. Sometimes it would get so foggy that I couldn't see the tree next to me. I couldn't see anything but the tree I was in. I couldn't see the ground. Obviously, there's a lot of really magical experiences that come along with tree sitting.
Started out with originally 22 tree sits. 22 tree sits, about 27 people sitting in 22 different trees. And it originally started out as a way to get women up in the trees, 13 trees for 13 women, the 13 moon cycles of the year. We got them, and then we got other people to come up and sit in trees, and then they were all extracted, removed, and the trees were taken.
I drive my daughter to school every day. You know, one day we spotted the tree sitters, and oh, hey, there's some tree sitters up there. So on the way home from school, the day we saw them on the way to school, Madeline said, can we stop? And why not? So we pulled over the car and stopped and went down to the base of the tree where Remedy was, whom we were soon to know as Remedy. And Madeline shouted up, hello, And Remedy came out from the top of the tree and shouted down, "Hello!" So we introduced ourselves. I as Madeline's dad, and Madeline, of course, as Madeline. And from then on, every day we'd, on our way to school, Madeline would shout out the window, "Hello, Ren!" By this time, Ren had joined the sit. And shout out, "Hello, Ren! Hello, Remedy!" And they would shout out in the morning, "Hello, Madeline! Hello, Madeline!" And one day we went to visit them, bring them some water, and they had made, Remedy had made a beautiful hat for Madeline, a knit hat. I thought it pretty special that a little girl, 4 years old, went on her way to school, yell up at the trees, "Good morning!" And the trees sing back to her, "Good morning, Madeline! Good morning!"
We're hoping to sit out the THP, the timber harvest plan here, which expires in, I think, a year and a half. So we're hoping to outlast the THP.
Through January.
It's a while away. We have to withstand a winter. We have to buckle down for the winter time. That's what we're doing now. We're getting all our supplies ready and getting geared down and ready for the wet season.
Yeah.
It'll be my first wet. He says there's two seasons. I think there's three seasons. It's July, August, and wet.
Oh, so we're in the dry season right now.
Yeah, we're ending it. We're in the August season. Whatever.
Are you going to wait?
That's a logging truck going by. He's not loaded. He's going up to load. Out of fresh water, man.
Exactly. We'll come down full of logs here pretty soon. Stay warm. Make sure you have enough gear to stay warm. And you've got good, solid people on the ground to support you, because that is essential. A tree sit is not the action of one person. Far from it. It's the actions of many people that pull off these actions, because we want to resist the destruction of a piece of land or the natural world. So you'd be safe. That's the other thing. The world does not need less tree sitters. So we don't want anybody falling out of trees anymore. That's, two people fell and died out of trees while I was up in Jerry. And that's a huge loss to the movement to save the forest. And it's just a huge loss. And so we don't want anyone to get hurt. But at the same time, we know that we are risking our lives. And we do it because it's that important. It's not just the safety of the tree sitter that people should be worried about. I did that because I am concerned about the safety of everybody who lives in this community, or this steep hillside might slide down into their yard or their house.
Yeah.
Or their water supply, which is what happens all the time. I mean, this isn't a new remote possibility. These are things that happen routinely in Humboldt County at this point.
We have ground support. That we have beautiful ground support for our food. It's just absolutely. I cherish them. They're wonderful people. They've had to put up with this road and like the cars driving by and the people coming by, and I don't know, it'd be nice to give them back their quiet sometime eventually. And so just so the trees can be saved and we can leave too, you know. Even though I love living in them, I love being here. It's just, I would like to return them back to the way that they were.
They have all the money, but we have the will, and I would rather be a match than a paper dollar bill. Yes, I would. Yes, I would. Guns, all we are is flesh and blood, but we will multiply our numbers and drown them in our flood. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over my.
They're logging in the Lower Eel River, they're logging in the Mattol, they're logging in several areas. I saw a logging truck come out of here actually just before I pulled up.
Yeah,
so I know they're coming out of here too. The incidental take permits, which is basically a loophole around the Endangered Species Act. Pacific Lumber was given incidental take permits, which allows them to incidentally kill endangered species.
The loggers are all like, "Oh, well, if Pacific Lumber's not here, then we're going to be out of business. We're not going to have anything to do, you know." But the fact is, there's been these people that have been sick of Pacific Lumber, because most of the people that work there realize what's going on. They're liquidated logging, and they're like clear cutting, and in 5 years there's not going to be any jobs left.
The district attorney filed a lawsuit against Pacific Lumber Company charging fraud, that they submitted fraudulent information in order to have access to additional acreage to log per year. So, and it had to do with an environmental impact report. They withheld information about how damaging their logging practices are, which opened it up and gave the company the ability to cut potentially thousands more acres than they would have if they would have submitted the proper information. Maxim Corporation wants to liquidate these trees.
One of the sponsored Forest Service conferences, all kinds of people come and talk. I remember this lady from her big outfit. I can't remember the name. Anyway, it's a big timber company, and their hired doctor, or their biologist, or gets up and says the most outrageous things. And I'm in the audience with Dr. Amaranthus, who is a scientist, a pure scientist. And he stands up and says, ask her a couple questions, and then points out that she's basically making stuff up, or reading the data in such a way that it's just so skewed. But it's what the company's paying her for. She's one of the biostitutes. You know, they've got their doctorate, and they take it to the highest bidder, and they sell it. And then they shill for that company. And it's, well, we've got the science to back it up. Look at what our, look, your doctors aren't right. Our doctor's right. And then they, oh, man, it's just such a shell game.
Clear-cut hundreds or thousands of acres, and there will be no significant environmental impact.
Putting back, I don't know what they're going to put back. Track housing. Just depleting the water sources. I mean, just completely ruining watersheds. Yeah. U.S. Department of Forestry is just as much as to blame, because they're the ones that okay, they're the ones that pass, approve every single THP that goes over their desk. And it's just, I mean, and every single THP that's being passed over has old growth in it. It's, so we need to stop it there. We need to stop approving the THPs, and that way, and we need to stop Pacific Lumber when they do the wrong things. You know, they continually break the law, and the U.S. Department of Forestry just continually slaps them on the wrist with these little misdemeanor counts with minor violations and minor economic. It's just fines of $13,000 is nothing to them when they're making $4 to $5 million on a clear cut. It's nothing to them.
These trees are Everstein right here. She's hollowing the base. They cut her, she's gonna kick back or something, explode. So they're not gonna get as much wood out of it. So it's more like they're going being spiteful towards the people that like the earth.
And their whole thing too is they want to get the trees on the ground. They don't care if they have to leave them there. In fact, they'd prefer to kind of leave them there for a while. Right now, Pacific Lumber has 10 million board feet worth of trees just laying on the ground, because to them, it doesn't count as being harvested until the trees actually make it to the mill. So they can say, oh yeah, that area hasn't been harvested yet because the trees aren't at the mill. So even if they do get shut down with cutting, they can still potentially go in and yard. And it's important to understand that cutting the trees down is not the most or the only destructive thing that happens during timber harvesting. Building roads and yarding the trees, which is dragging fallen trees across the forest floor, which destroys the forest floor, which is what builds gigantic trees. It does an incredible amount of damage. And you don't just clear cut a forest and then have an old growth forest again in 1,000 years. That's not how it works. The soil has to regenerate itself, which takes a long time and a very long process. Pacific Lumber, of course, likes to interrupt that process by using thousands and thousands of gallons of herbicides on areas after they clear cut. You know, they clear cut it, they burn it, and then they herbicide it. So it's slash burn and poison forestry, and it's perfectly legal to do in California.
Each mature, be it Doug fir or ponderosa pine or sugar pine, any of the larger mature trees, actively pump into the atmosphere on a daily basis over 300 gallons of water a day. That is what they do. They're giant pumps. They're connected to this mycorrhizal network, say 30 or 50 trees per acre. Multiply that times 300. Every day it goes into the atmosphere. And if that stops going in on a large clear-cut area, you're changing that microclimate in that area. You're absolutely affecting it in a huge way in the amount of moisture that has traditionally gone in. And so then you're altering the climate.
In South America or other places, they have slash and burn forestry. It's really terrible. It's like, yeah, well, here we have slash and burn and poison. Every day they're still cutting. So what we need by one of these lawsuits that's out there right now is some injunctive relief, which means that we could put the logging on hold while we resolve these issues. Because Pacific Lumber, when they're, you know, and they have been the target of lawsuits pretty much since the Maxam takeover. I mean, one of the first lawsuits was called Pacific Lumber versus Maxam Corporation because they were trying to keep the takeover from happening.
Just depleting the water sources. I mean, just completely ruining watersheds. Right after the Headwaters Agreement, they started tripling harvesting of the trees. The Headwaters Agreement that saved Headwaters Forest really caused devastation for a whole lot of other land.
That's a band-tailed pigeon. That bird that just flew by. They go,
ooh, ooh, ooh. They liquidated the retirement fund of Pacific Lumber right here in Scotia and paid off some $64 million debt or something like that using the pension funds of the workers and left them without anything to retire on. Less than 3% is the number we're shouting. Less than 3% of the native redwood old growth is what's left.
I think there's less than 2% now.
Probably less than 2% now because this number's been going around for a few.
I remember when that was, that was before.
And whose figure is that?
I think it's Department of Forestry number. Nutrient that we can get off of the tree, and we're not, and we're not even like fully meeting the potential that the redwood has to offer for us at all. 1400 years is a long time, and for us as human beings to just take that away just because we've been here with rational minds for the last few hundred years, it does not make sense. It does not make sense. There's no sense in taking something that has been around this long instead of just sitting down and listening to them. Maxam does own 75% of freshwater. Maxam does own a very large portion of these forests. It's this area right here. It's this little town right here. It's this little area right here that's watershed has been destroyed because of this clear cutting. It's crazy. One man is really doing this. It's amazing what one person can do. And if everybody that believes in these trees and everybody that fight that really wants nature to exist, if we all banded together and really put forces against this one man, we can make a serious change. Because that's what it's going to change. It's going to take him to get hurt him, or it's going to hurt him the most. And that's in his pocketbook. That means start fining him for all those regulations that he has broken. Over 303 years, Pacific Lumber has been cited. Over 300 violations in 3 years of forestry, just where they're cutting without a license, where they're cutting where they shouldn't be cutting. They're cutting old growth trees that aren't in the THP areas. It's just ridiculous that we're just continually letting them get away. And with what, a 13,000 fine over the 3 years and 300 violations? Don't make sense.
Which means they were clear cutting many of the trees as fast as possible, regardless of the damage to water quality or endangered species or the actual human residents who had lost their actual water sources in freshwater. So I knew what was going on in freshwater. And Jerry, to me, was a huge opportunity to stand up to just incredible destruction sanctioned by the government allowing this to happen.
We're killing our earth. We're taking her lungs.
It's so important for us to somehow transmit that information to the residents, the loggers and the environmentalists, that we should be on the same side. That environmentalists shouldn't think that we should stop cutting down all the trees, because timber harvest is our natural resource. That's how the locals can make money. But the fact is that the millions of dollars that are exploited out of this area are being shipped down to Houston, Texas. And it's like the loggers should realize that some loggers just kind of, they think that they should cut down all the trees because that's just what they should make money. But think about 10 years down the line when there's no trees in this area. Like, Maxam Corporation has a direct plans to turn this from a resource-based economy to a service-based economy. They're like, well, we don't need our resources. We can perform services. You know, we can mill trees from Canada. But what they don't really realize is that we're both on the same side, is that the loggers and the environmentalists should be on the same side. We are the ones that actually live on this land. Our common enemy is Charles Hurwitz. He's the one that moved in here. He's a corporation.
A few years ago, we have what a lot of people call the Thanksgiving Day Massacre, when there was an area in the headwaters, a grove, an ancient redwood grove that was being logged. Epic put a temporary restraining order on the timber harvest plan. Pacific Lumber went in there with lights, huge spotlights, and they had crews 24 hours a day logging. I mean, talk about logging as much as you can, as fast as possible. You know, they had floodlights in there with 24-hour logging crews in there cutting the trees down so that by the time it gets resolved in court, well, then it's a moot point and it doesn't matter anymore. Their reasoning, as I heard it on the stand by Mark Stopher from the Department of Fish and Game, who helped orchestrate this monstrosity, is that if they log a tree that houses a marbled murrelet, when the marbled murrelet is not in the tree, then there's no harm done. So, under the same kind of thinking, apparently, we can go to Mark Stopher's house and bulldoze it while he's not there, and there'll be no harm done. It's like I go to these court hearings, and I sit in a room full of men who have together conspired and orchestrated to do generations worth of damage to this area. Because Pacific Lumber owned the largest stands of unprotected old-growth redwoods left in the world, Pacific Lumber operated in such a way that they wanted to have both future jobs and forest for generations to come. And when Maxam took over, any values like that completely went down the drain, and they just wanted to liquidate. They wanted short-term to maximize their short-term profits, which means we've got so much cumulative impacts because of this really high-impact logging that really it's probably not acceptable to cut trees, period, in freshwater for 20 years until we can see some, can see that the coho start to come back and see this land start to recover. This is a bunch of tree sitters in the lower village, which is now a gigantic clear cut that you drove through on the way to Jerry and Everstein. Yeah, this was held the largest platform in Humboldt County of all the tree sits. There were nearly 30 at one point. And this is the tree where there was a gigantic platform where all the tree sitters, not me, but the ones that lived down there, would congregate and have meals together. Here's a tree sitter locked down to a tree. Here's climber Eric coming up after the tree sitter. Here's a person locked down on the ground, trying to keep them from going up after the tree sitters. And here's the group of climbers with all their climbing gear walking towards the tree sitters. This is a lot of pictures of people being arrested, tree sitters being evicted. Watching, you know, the looks on the faces of the press and the cops, none of them look too happy. This guy never looks very happy. He's always there. I think that a lot of these people are very conflicted about what they're doing. And other people have talked to people in Pacific Lumber or people involved with Eric Schatz Tree Service, who takes the tree sitters down. You know, as one person put it, he said, "I'm not losing sleep over it, but I am very conflicted about it."
Their particular approach, this particular company that is doing it, their approach, I find a little heavy-handed, and they seem to be doing it with a mean spirit, mean-spiritedly, if you will. They didn't leave a buffer zone from the street. I mean, even that's kind of like common courtesy. You come in and, you know, you don't. And they're very good at what they do. They just devastate it and leave a mess. Very good at what they do. And that's what I drive home and see. And it's total disregard, and it's almost with a prideful disregard, and that's what kind of gets me.
Prideful disregard.
So what is the reason here? Is that I used to think that greed is the reason for all of this outrageous behavior, but I think maybe destruction is the other reason behind all this behavior. You know, again, if they're going to turn it into real estate, and they just want to clear the area, then that's what they're going to do. They've cut down trees and occupied marbled murrelet habitat that shattered when they hit the ground. We're talking 2,000-year-old trees, potentially, that absolutely shattered, that they couldn't mill. So there's no money. Yeah, so now there's less habitat for an endangered species. They're further destroying the water quality in watersheds that are already impaired because of this high-impact logging.
It's almost like a game, like who can get the last redwood? I wonder if they do that in boardrooms.
I wonder if their boardrooms are made out of redwood.
Well, there's a big commercial demand for old growth redwood, and they're supplying that demand, unfortunately. There are still people that want that heart redwood, that want that deck to look like old growth redwood, like what the wood that comes from an old growth redwood, because the redwood that they're growing now is not producing the same type of wood, because they're growing them at a much quicker rate. They're made to grow fast so we can get this wood, and the wood's all spongy and just not the way that this tree is. This tree took 1,500 years to make its wood. It's nice, solid, and everything, and so they want that wood. That's the commercial.
That's an incredible piece back there. I mean, that looks like velvet.
There's a piece that almost, it's three-dimensional.
Oh, that one up on the wall over there.
This one, the top one up here.
Uh-huh.
Where are you looking at? This
one? Way up at the top, you know, it's got all that oil.
Velvet, yeah.
What causes that curly look to the wood?
Compression, they tell me. The old growth, the tree gets so heavy that it starts compressing in certain spots.
See, when we were building the inside of our boat, the guy was saying, well, you know, he's a really good carpenter. And he was saying, well, you know, what kind of wood do you want? I'm going, well, mahogany. And so, you know, I want to go down to the mahogany shop and we'll go look. So we go there and I tell him the specs of what I want. If we go there, we get this board that's like 20 inches wide, 12 feet long. And we're going, oh, right. And so we bought it. And we were able to make a whole wall of the boat out of this one board. You know, and every cutout, every drawer, everything opens up, but it's all part of this board.
Yeah.
So it was really a cool boat thing. Like about halfway through, he goes, did you ever think about it? Like if somebody just came over here and cat scanned your body and cut it right in half and pulled it out and then like mounted it up on the wall and everybody like would walk by and say, you know, like, wow, look at the glare off of his intestines. Oh, yeah. And, you know, check out the way
that's what the wood was, huh?
And that's what the wood was, yeah. And it's like it changed my whole concept of wood. That was
total clear cut where they go down through the riparian zone and take everything. You're heating up the water in the creek. Killing the fish because they're definitely on program to be at a certain temperature at a certain time of the year in the riparian zone. The around the water should be so protective. It's shade tree cover, but I've seen places that were it's just obscene. We're talking about an organism that's been here hundreds of millions of years. And has made life as we know it possible on this planet. Everything it does, and yet we do not recognize it as an intelligence. We can say, oh, maybe dolphins are smart. They have brains. Oh, maybe whales too. Oh, yeah, maybe. But trees? Oh, there can be no intelligence there. It's just a thing. There's no brain. Show me the brain, and I'll show you intelligence because I'm a human. It's just so arrogant. To look at the organism that provided us the place to live and then kill it. Just go in and say, let's just take hundreds of acres and we'll chip them up and make cardboard boxes out of them. Cool, huh? There's intelligence for you, huh? We're smart. We made money.
Like these trees falling over here, you know, they cut them and we knew that they wanted them, but it brought me back. I mean, I had left, I sat in Anastasia for 2 months, and then I left. And once those trees fell, I came back, and I said, there's no way I can leave and let it happen to these trees, too. And then that, you know, 3 weeks I was gone, they cut two beautiful trees down. And it takes a while to forgive yourself, to say that there is very little you could do about it, and just come back and try to do what you can now.
They have all the money, but we have the will, and I would rather be a match than a paper dollar bill. Yes, I would. Yes, I would. They have the guns. All we are is flesh and blood, but we will multiply our numbers and drown them in our flood. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over mine.
The creation of this program is dedicated to James Latham at Radio for Peace International. James led the crusade by listeners to save the station when the University for Peace sent armed guards to our building. They chained the gates, cut power, water, and sewer, and censored the voice of RFPI. James, thank you for your long fight.
They have all the money, but we have the will, and I would rather be a match than a paper dollar bill. Yes, I would. Yes, I would. They have the guns. All we are is flesh and blood, but we will multiply our numbers and drown them in our flood. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my.
This is Scott Fratcher from Radio for Peace International, and we support tree sitters around the world.
They've evicted 3 people out of Jerry since March 17th. The tree is still standing. So they've spent thousands of dollars and risked people's lives and made a huge big scene for a tree that they haven't even been able to cut down. And even if they do cut the tree down, they've all already said that it's not worth anything timber-wise. I mean, it's pretty much hollow. It's leaning over a steep hill. It's going to shatter when it hits the ground. And so they won't be able to mill it. They won't be able to get any money out of it. But they're more than willing to risk people's lives in order to take tree sitters out of these trees for no money.
That was a horrible time in these days. There's the helicopters flying right close to us. They're also logging, and they're also yarding, and they're also extracting. So all you'd hear all day is... beep, 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 beep. That's all you'd hear, and you have to live with that. And then we had to work all night setting stuff back up since they cut it. So you wouldn't sleep ever, and you just lose your mind.
Batteries,
Gore-Tex,
webbings and stuff are all really vital, because when climbers do come, they do take everything. They cut
everything
it down.
Get their hands on.
They cut like lines. They'll like climb up to the line. They'll cut it down and drop it and just let everything fly. Climb into our platform and throw everything out and just let it fly. They came in and they cut the last two trees, the last two large old growths. They came in at about 8:30 at night. And they cut them, but they didn't extract. The trees were empty. That was right across the way. I don't know if you guys know, but that's right across the way right there. Where those two, or that big empty spot, there used to be two 1,400-year-old earth growth trees that just stood there, stood ground.
Wow.
Huge, beautiful. They're testaments to our struggle here. They just stood there bravely. And one night they went unoccupied, and they came and they cut them.
And do they tend to, like, come up in the middle of the night, or when do they tend to try their extraction?
During working hours, business, you know, they're business people, 9 to 5.
You can easily take a picture of the loggers and the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department standing together, because they're all on the same team. Here's Climber Eric climbing up the tree. I was taken down on a Monday, and then every day that followed for a week were continual... tree sitter evictions.
Were you extracted taken down by Eric?
Yeah, I was taken down. I was not taken down, with my consent. Eric and two other men came up and cut me out of the lockbox. I was attached to the tree about 180 feet above the ground.
Pacific Lumber hires out private contractors, private climbers that will ascend the tree using a girth and spur system. They'll, like, wrap around the tree, and they'll spur into the tree, and they'll climb up it. And they physically pull us out of the trees using pain compliance techniques or any other way that they can get us out of the trees. And then they lower us down.
Two women. One was a 50-year-old school teacher, and another woman, a 56-year-old forest activist, who locked down at the base of my tree. They locked their arms around smaller redwoods to try to keep them, the climbers, from coming up after me. Those women were cut out of their lockboxes with grinders, arrested, taken to jail. Then the climbers came up after me, and it was a very windy day, and we were 180 feet above the ground, which made it very difficult for the climbers to haul all their gear and everything up into the tree. I even thought at one point that they would not extract me because of the danger imposed by the wind. But, you know, danger is not a concern of theirs, and so they just took the extra time, and they were actually able to cut there were chains around my wrist that had me locked into the lockbox that were a little too long, and so they were able to just reach in, cut the chains. By the time they had my hands free of the lockbox, they already had me in two harnesses. They put a chest harness and a waist harness on me. So by that time, I was already hooked up to all their gear, and then they just lowered me down. I was arrested and taken to jail. I was charged with trespassing and violating a court order. A temporary restraining order had been signed by Judge Reinholdson about 4 days before I was extracted. I was never convicted of the temporary restraining order because I actually wasn't served with the temporary restraining order papers until after I was in jail. I was wearing a jumpsuit when I was handed these papers about the temporary restraining order, and so you can't arrest a person for something they didn't know about. Because I've never been arrested before and I have no prior convictions, there were nearly 40 people arrested the week that I was taken down, and people have gotten everything from jail sentences, hundreds of dollars in fines, probation, deferred judgments, everything you can get for being arrested and breaking the law. Forest offenders were given those sentences. I got a very light sentence because of my personal situation. I had no prior record. But unfortunately, I was the most high-profile tree sitter. I was up for nearly a year without touching the ground. I'd made national and international media several times. Pacific Lumber chose to use me to demonize the district attorney who is currently suing Pacific Lumber Company for $300 million. And so it's this big political chess game that's going on. And so if I personally were arrested on Pacific Lumber property again, I would certainly get a much stiffer penalty. It was very horrible. And so after they took her down, and this is them dragging her out, she did go limp, and they had to haul her out of there. And there's a lot of witnesses. There were tons of cops there. Humboldt County Sheriff's Department, the Eureka Police Department, Highway Patrol, and none of them would witness what was going on in the tree. We were asking them, please come and see what's happening, watch what's happening, but they all stood in a place where they couldn't see what was happening up there so that none of them could be witnesses. So that they couldn't be witnesses, which is why I call the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department Maxam Security in disguise, because that's exactly what they are.
And have you been extracted?
I haven't ever been extracted, no.
And do you have a plan if you're going to be extracted?
Yes, I do. If climbers are coming up after my tree, I sleep up about 20 feet above my platform. I'll jump down to my platform. I'll grab my bag if my bag's not with me, and then I'll run up to the very tip of the tree. And there's a traverse, a line set in between Anastasia, which is my tree, and Everstein, which is a tree right over here. There's a line set, there's a double line set up that I will tie myself into, and I will rappel out into the middle of it, just like you saw me do here, except that will be 200 feet in the air and with a lot more distance in between the trees. And I will sit there until they try to figure out a way to get me out of the tree or off of there. And they will try. They'll try different stuff.
The third extraction that happened out of Jerry was a person named Smokey was up in the tree, and he locked down to a 600-pound barrel of cement because he thought that that would put himself in such a precarious position that there's no way that they would try to lower him down. But again, they have no concern for safety. They went up after him. They attached him and the barrel to some kind of rigging device and then dropped the platform out from underneath him and then dropped both him and the barrel to the ground. And then, just like a miracle, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department showed up and started cutting him out of the barrel with a jackhammer and chisel and all the stuff. And that took quite a while. And once they got him out, they took him to jail, too. And then the tree was again immediately reoccupied. So three evictions, that tree has survived.
Traverses are what save the trees, because we can guard two trees at once with one traverse. And if there's only a few sitters, then traverses are vital to saving the trees.
Or we have to put lock boxes back up in the trees, fortify, you know, be prepared. Lock box, devices that you chain yourself inside to by your wrists so they can't pull you out. There's all kinds of them.
They're two metal pipes generally.
Yeah, they're like an elbow, a pipe, and then there's like a bite and you clip into that and you with chains around your wrists so they can't pull you out and they have to grind you out.
There are several cell organizations or cell companies that are named in the suit. And if I'm not mistaken, Maxam actually invented two more cell companies, Gideon and another one, potentially to transfer assets so that they could save to get them out of the lawsuit. So, but I'm not fully aware of what the situation is at this point with that.
Terrorist law companies breaking down into cells. We found
a
cell of terrorism, and they're terrorizing the forest of the freshwater.
Mm-hmm. You think about
expand the meaning of the word.
Right. When you listen to how the way they break this down, Pacific Lumber Company owns the land. Scotia Pacific owns the trees. You know, so they can invent all these different ways to, I don't know if maybe another company owns the water or another company owns the air that's above, you know, right, you know, and that actually might be true because that is another thing they do is they mine.
The mineral rights out and yet it's below the earth, below the trees and supporting a
So I'm being sued by Pacific Lumber Company and Scotia Pacific, the supposed owner of the land and the supposed owner of the tree where I did my tree sit. So we're in the early stages of that lawsuit. The suit is called Pacific Lumber Company versus Remedy, if that tells you anything. I think it's a very proper name. And there's 39 people on the lawsuit, including myself. They're suing me for $250,000, charging that I trespass and that I committed conspiracy to trespass on their land. We recently have filed a motion to bifurcate, which means that we don't all want to be tried together. We want our own separate trials because there are people on this lawsuit that were arrested in Freshwater, in the Matole, in Grizzly Creek, and I believe one other area, the Demonstration Forest. So there's at least four geographic locations spread out over, I believe, 8 or 9 months. And they're charging that we all conspired together to pull off all these tree sits and all these actions, which isn't even true. I mean, I met two of the people that I supposedly conspired with and formed tree villages with, they say, an hour before the hearing Friday morning. I believe at this stage it looks like we have just succeeded in dividing that one lawsuit that they have against us into at least four lawsuits, which is great because that's going to cost the company a lot of money. To pull off one of these lawsuits against us costs a lot of money anyway because these lawyers, their lawyers are so expensive. But they're suing people that generally don't have anything. I'm what they call judgment proof. I don't own anything. I don't own that vehicle over there. You know, I don't own... Maybe Charles Hurwitz can have my Jail Hurwitz t-shirt if he wants.
Homeland Security to stop tree sitters?
Yeah. The Homeland Well, Earth First has been claimed as a terrorist organization, eco-terrorist. So if, through that, they were able to justify using all this extra funds, because Humboldt County doesn't have a whole lot of Taliban running around bombing people and stuff, or whatever. There's not really any terrorist activity here at all. People are pretty peaceful. So they call tree sitters terrorists. And that's how they funded the whole... Because Pacific Lumber didn't have to pay one single one of those cops to be up here. And there was probably, I don't know, was there like 30 or 40 of them? They all had taser guns and everything. They were pepper spraying people and tasing them, like right in front of, you know, on my road.
When they call tree sitters eco-terrorists, that's really odd, because who is, in fact, terrorizing the ecosystem? It's the companies. So the cops should be tasering and macing the executives that run these companies, because they are, in fact, eco-terrorists. They are who Homeland Security should be going after. The tree sitters are not hurting the environment. They're trying to save the environment. The only people out there trying to do bad things, it's so backwards that they can even turn the language around and point their fingers at people that are peacefully trying to stop the terrorism. The terrorism.
There has been, including when I was in the tree, a very concerted effort to get tree sitters down. I mean, when I was in the tree, they tried starving me down, sleep-depriving me down, blowing me out with a helicopter, cutting trees directly at the tree I was in, hitting the tree I was in with other trees, trying to get me down. It's not like they just picked a moment to do it. But part of what I saw happening was they kind of wait, and they... It's almost like I realized in my dealing with the CEO of Maxam Corporation, which is the corporation I began protesting, it's almost like a chess game. And they're very strategically looking at when to move a pawn and who that pawn is. And usually in a corporation, it's their workers. Then when to move the queen to a specific position. So it's very much like a chess game. And a lot of it is a bet, but they have people who are paid to bet on that chess game and to move those pieces in a very strategic way. So I think a lot of what was happening around the tree sits as well was there was a surge in efforts of support. Remedy was coming very close to having spent a year in the tree. And they knew from interacting with me that that kind of a culture that's addicted to numbers and records and anniversaries and things like that, that for her to reach that mark would resurge the support. And so I think there was a very concerted effort to stop that energy while it was coming. And unfortunately, in many ways, they were right, because so often one of the things I talk to people about is that we have to do what we do regardless of the outcome. We need to do it because what else would we want to do with our lives? And when we're attached to the outcome, when something like that happens, it stops us in our tracks. And instead, it should have just fueled the movement even more. It should have, the audacity of the way in which they risked those activists' life getting them down, because some of the ways they took activists down was extremely dangerous. The audacity of a company that would treat people like that, let alone what they're doing to the planet, should have been a fuel to surge a whole new layer of people. And it happened, but only for a short time, and then the energy dissipated. And so the forests still need people's help. And part of what I'm constantly trying to do is say that I don't want to live in a world of leaders and followers. I want to live in a world of leaders and leaders and leaders. And you can look at any movement throughout history that's been based on one leader, and when something happens to that leader, that movement falls apart.
I think that the timing of the tree sitters being taken down and the war in Iraq was planned. You know, it was a time where the media was totally looking the other way. And so Pacific Lumber chose that time to come in now when they knew that the media would not be paying attention. And they got away with a lot of really horrible things that week. And really putting people's lives at risk, hurting people pretty terribly in some cases. And certainly clear cutting an area that had 1,000-plus-year-old trees, you know, so further permanent damage in a watershed that is already suffering permanent damage, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. So,
but I never got arrested here. I got arrested by the feddies. It was worse.
And what were you arrested for?
Saving trees. Yeah.
He was sitting up in a tree.
And were you extracted?
No. They starved us out of the trees using, like, psychological warfare, and they, like, surrounded us with canine units and night vision goggles and, like, all kind of...
Floodlights.
They played music all night. They asked me who I was sleeping with, all this personal information. They're, like, just... This is the your United States government here.
And how long did that continue on for?
Oh, we came down in a week, because...
You lasted a week of that.
It was like just a bunch of bullshit. I was pissed. Believe me. And like, we just decided to come down because we're getting aggro, you know?
I think that if they see us angry too, they feel like they've won like a small battle with us, you know, because we don't like to be angry. So when they do anger us, they have won. They have won a small battle, and it's just, we can't let them anger us because we're more than that.
After I was taken out of Jerry, a woman named Mystique climbed back up in the tree right after I was taken down, and 3 days later they went up after her. Four men went up after this one woman, and she went to the very top of Jerry. She was 200 feet above the ground in a place where I never stood in a year of living in that tree because it's just so scary up there. But this very brave woman went to the very top of this tree, and Eric Schatz went up after her and told her that if she fell, that he and his employees would all testify that she committed suicide. And he put a rope, one single rope, around her rib cage once and started lowering her from a point, an anchor point, below where she was. So it was one of the most dangerous, terrible things I've ever seen. We all thought we were going to watch somebody die that day.
And he climbs with about eight other, he has a team of eight climbers, and they're all pretty burly, mean-looking guys, and there's one called the Ox, and they're all pretty, all they want to do is get us out of the tree, and that's all they get paid for, is to get us out of the tree.
And what do they get paid to remove a tree sitter?
Oh, there's all kinds of stories about that,
Are there any women extractors?
No. There's not. And there has been on several occasions where the women have removed their clothing in protest and crawled up to the tippy whippies of trees and been forced, have been handled by the climbers in order, because they have to try to get a harness onto us, and because that's the safest way to lower us out of a tree. And if you're naked, you're not wearing a harness. So they tear you off the tree and they put a harness on you, and you are physically attacked, it seems. It's pretty violent, and it gets down to it, and we're trying our hardest not to use no violence against them, but it's a restraint that we have to come to, because if we use any kind of force on them, then it's just their way of getting back to us, you know, saying, oh, we had to because they were using force against us, so we have to not use any force at all. We have to use our words, use our mouths to try to get them to stop begging and pleading.
And what was the reason for limbing the tree?
Spite and hatred. There's no reason to limb the tree. It's not something they do as a general practice for logging. Generally they cut the limbs off a tree after they've already cut the tree down. But in this case, their reasoning is probably that they wanted to keep tree sitters from going back up because that had already happened once. But my feeling is that they wanted to send a very clear message to anybody who dared stand in their way. You know, they're going to butcher this 1,200-year-old tree just to teach us a lesson, teach me a lesson maybe, for sitting in this tree, for loving this tree, for loving this area for solidly for 360 days without touching the ground. I believe it was spite and hatred. I don't think there's any other reason.
Primary reason is probably because he didn't want us getting back into the tree without having some difficulty.
And what effect is that? How old do you think Jerry is?
2,000 years old or more.
So what effect does this have on a 2,000-year-old tree to have all of its limbs cut off? There's nothing left. All it is a giant, it looks like a giant stump.
I've climbed Jerry a whole bunch of times since all that's happened. And she's actually growing back. New branches out of all of the cut zones where her limbs were cut. But I probably, it's probably another like 10 years until you see the effects of what's happened to that tree. Actually like rise up and come to surface level.
But I encourage people to take a little bit of training, and I really support groups like the Ruckus Society that actually does trainings for people who are interested in doing direct action. And I think it's so crucial because I've been in actions where it's very obvious who's gone through training and who hasn't. In direct action, there's always variables that you don't know what's going to happen. And the more training you have, the more prepared you are to deal with the surprises. Like if you've gone through training, you know you have coping mechanisms on how not to panic in that situation. But if you haven't had training, we're animals. So animals' response is fight or flight. So your immediate response to pepper spray is fight or flight in an animalistic response. Whereas if you have training, you know there's another way that you can drop down. There's various tools you can use to deal when pepper spray is being shot. But I also encourage people, don't let your belief that you don't know enough or have enough resources ever stop you. Because who we are is who we're meant to be. And I didn't have training, and I didn't have information, but I had enough to know that what was happening was wrong, and I needed to be involved in changing it.
Salmon River, the most diverse conifer forest in the world. Over 19 species of conifers in 1 acre of some of these places. I had to go and try to, like, help, you know?
I mean, the truth is, the people that are down here supporting the trees, protests are going on, are all sorts. We have people of all ages. We have local residents, and we have people from all over the world and all over the country, you know. And the fact is that it gets frustrating sometimes when you have a whole village of trees set up, and then 10 tree sits get wiped out in a day. But the fact is that we still have Jerry, you know. We still have those key trees, and we have to realize that we have power over the corporations, as much as they don't want to admit it, that we just have to keep hope up.
You don't give up. The trees, like in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings stories, if only they could talk. So you're their voice. If only they were Ents, and they could stand up and say, hey, get away from me with that thing. I don't want a chainsaw on me. I don't want that. But they don't have that voice. You're the voice. You're the co-evolving organism that has thrived on this planet because of this other organism. And you're its voice. And so you keep speaking, and you keep speaking. Don't give up. Don't give up. Look at them and say, hey, I got to play by a whole set of different rules than you. I got to love you, man, because I love these trees and I love you. And that's the way you got to do it. And it puts you on a higher moral plane than them by tons of yards. And remember that. Remember your holy place in your heart. Don't give up. Don't give up.
Much support for these trees, that isn't very apparent on face value. It takes lots of time. It takes people from all different backgrounds, from being a lawyer to being someone that loves the outdoors to go tree sit, to someone that's around in the community that's willing to give food. So it's not just about the tree sitters, but it's about the whole group of people or the whole organization to come together as one to pretty much keep a tree sit going. Just one tree sit, never mind the several tree sits that are up right now. That's what it's all about. that's a primary cause. I mean, we're here to save trees, but we're also here to, like, bring awareness that a community has the power is empowered by themselves to do what they need to do, regardless of outside sources. and that people can live together peacefully without having to be at each other's throat for everything. We might have different opinions on things, but in the end, people come together for this one cause, which is to save a tree.
It's such a small number. It feels like sometimes we just can't give up hope. We just got to keep on doing what we believe in, knowing what's right in our hearts, and just keep doing it. And hope that our way of life, the way that we're doing it, the way our love is going to transpire and work its magic on them. And they're going to say, here, there are the trees.
This program was produced for Radio for Peace International by Scott Fratcher and Allison Thompson. If you are feeling a calling to become the media, then you may find a path in the courses taught at the grounds of Radio for Peace International in Costa Rica. Radio for Peace has trained more than 300 peace journalists over the last 16 years. Radio for Peace International plans to keep teaching peace journalism at our new offices located in San Jose, Costa Rica. Please log on to our website at rfpi.org. That's www.rfpi.org. The station is under assault as I type, so please be prepared to search for Radio for Peace International and accept our apologies that our website is not always up to date. We are still in business and asking for help. Please remember, this is a listener-supported progressive shortwave station. Our programming includes stories just like this RFPI-produced show, along with Democracy Now!, Peace Watch!, Free Speech Radio News, and many other independently produced radio stories. We need also to ask for donations, as the forces of billionaire Maurice Strong and the University for Peace have wasted all our last 2 years' budgets in defense of the station rather than building a station. Log on to our website, www.rfpi.org, or email me direct, sfratcher@hotmail.com, sfratcher@hotmail.com. And Remedy, can you give us your website?
CONTRAST.org/TREESIT.
You can get in contact with some of my friends through a website called WeSaveTrees.org. Send contributions to Wolverine Upper Village at P.O. Box 70, Neyland, California, KNEELAND. 954-549. You could also call the people up in Upper Village here, Jerry Everstein and everybody, at 707-834-3219, and we'll be here.
Ain't nobody else telling it. Ain't nobody. But Radio for Peace International.